Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for tuning in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that is solely dedicated to the multifamily industry. I'm your host, Paul Marks, and we have a great show with wonderful guests who are extremely knowledgeable and right in the middle of today's topic. And today we're discussing the topic of how reopening the economy impacts multifamily management. Joining me today are two longtime multifamily industry veterans who are sought-after national speakers and educators, Rich George, president of the NOI Coach, and Doug Chasick, president of the Apartment Doctor. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning, welcome. Afternoon, Paul.
So, Rich, the reopening the economy, that you turn on the news that's all you really hear about is reopening the economy. And, of course, nobody on the news is talking about specifically the multifamily industry. But when the economy reopens, how is it going to happen?
You know, Paul, as it relates to this industry, I think it's important, first of all, that we recognize there is a really politically charged element of this conversation. And we're going to do our best to avoid that today, because it's not about whether we should or whether we shouldn't. As an industry, we just have to be prepared for when it does, and in the varying ways throughout the country that it will, because we're already seeing here in the early stages that, you know, we've got different states and different governors that are going to be letting loose different things at different times. And what I think is going to be interesting is, just because a governor or leadership in our government says, you know, it's time to reopen, it's also going to be up to the population. It's going to be up to the businesses to decide what they're going to do. So as a business, we have to decide what we're going to do. What I know is that it's not going to be as simple as a toggle light switch. It's not we move from the off position to the on position. You know, this is going to be like a dimmer switch. We're going to have to slowly but surely throttle this thing up, and we're going to have to react, because for us as an industry, we never really closed. We were key and essential. So we continued to work throughout this. So it's not about whether or not we go back to work. We've been working at the multifamily industry all the way through. What we have to know is that we are going to now be having other people coming into our world, and we're going to have to figure out what that new way for our industry is.
And Doug, what do you feel like, or what does the reopening of the economy mean to the multifamily industry?
I heard it put very well this morning on a show where the gentleman said that it's about finding that balance between saving lives and saving livelihoods, and looking at our customer and realizing how they're just one part in this long line of people who are interconnected. If our resident, their business isn't opening or isn't thriving, how do they pay the rent? How do we pay our contractor, the mortgage, et cetera? I think the most important thing to realize is whether or not people admit it explicitly. Most of us are afraid and anxious, and our job, considering how much time people spend with us as their landlord, our job is to be empathetic while, in the case of fair housing, not being too empathetic or too helpful, still maintaining a consistency and being as reassuring as we can without making promises that we can't keep.
So, Rich, how do you think the approach to the strategic planning portion of this reopening process is going to look?
You know, I think that we have to look at this as an extremely personal and individual response. And when I say that, we're going to be looking individually at our properties, at our employees, at our residents, at our contractors, at our workflow. We have to just be relentless about the fact that there is no one-size-fits-all solution to this. So I think that the smart companies out there have probably already started, or they're just starting to form a reopening task force. They're getting some of their companies' thought leaders, and they're tasking them with how are we going to have this move forward plan? And this, we're not talking about the next week. We're not talking about the next 2 weeks. We're really talking about the rest of this year. How is this going to impact us moving forward? And that's where we are going to see that task force, that group of people, is going to have to put together staged planning. You know, the government's plan that they've come out with is phase one, phase two, phase three. When I first started putting together this conversation, because, you know, we prepare for these conversations, and NAA had asked for Doug and I to put together some micro webinars about, you know, how we're going to reopen the multifamily industry. And that's the reason I reached out to you, Paul, so we could have this conversation here. You know, there's going to be really three stages, in my opinion. I think there's going to be multiple layers of each of those stages, but overall, there's three stages that these task force or these work groups have to look at.
So, Rich, when you put together this task force, if someone's going to do that within their organization, what are the top things that they should keep in mind as they move forward?
You know, the thought here, I believe, is that they have to come up with their own plan of work. But I see it as three phases, and those three phases that are kind of overviewing. There's going to be multiple sub phases of these, but at the beginning, the first thing they need to look at is stage one, which is the safety for our stakeholders, the safety of our residents, the safety of our employees, the safety of the guests. And this is something that we're already doing, because we've all been coming up with unique ways as we have gone back to work with personal protective equipment and the various other things. And we'll dig into this maybe a little bit later in the call, but that safety, we need to really amp it up as we start to see more and more people coming into our offices. You know, then they're going to migrate to stage two, which these aren't necessarily in order. Some of these things can be done simultaneously, but they're going to look at management and operational changes. These changes to our policies, these changes to our workflow, are these permanent changes or are they temporary changes based on where we're at with our society? You know, and then really at the end of all of this, after we get through these giant hurdles of making sure people are safe and making sure we've got policies that support where we're at, we're going to move into stage three, which is that new way for multifamily management. You know, everybody's using the words new normal, and I'm avoiding those words because there's nothing normal about where we're at as a country, as a society, as a world. So we are going to have a new way, and we're going to be doing some business differently.
Well, we've got a few minutes left in the segment. Let me just ask, as far as stage one goes, what do we need to keep in mind for the safety of our employees, residents, prospects, and guests?
You know, that's a really deep topic, Paul. And maybe after we come back from the break, we'll look a little bit deeper at that. But we really have to say, where are people potentially going to be exposed? Because, you know, Doug, I know that you have an opinion on this. You know, you were talking about we have to keep in mind fair housing. We have to also keep in mind the fact that there may be litigation that results from this. And we have to walk our way through this in a way. And how would you see that we would avoid that litigation?
Well, just like fair housing complaints, you're never going to avoid it. The best we can hope for is to minimize the possibility that we're in there. And there's already conversations going on about how much, if at all, the federal government is going to indemnify certain businesses. I think that we have to, first of all, rely on authorities, that we should be adopting whatever the CDC, whatever OSHA, whatever standards are out there, as well as what our local and state health departments are advising our best practices for maintaining a safe, as in, you know, free of hazards, clean environment. And second of all, for lawsuits, whether they are about negligence or whether they are about fair, consistency is the key. As I mentioned earlier, we've got to avoid being too helpful. We need to be focused on treating everyone equally and consistently, not necessarily the same, but equally and consistently, rely on authority. And, you know, I think an important point to remember about the work groups, the task force, is everything's got to be on the table, that we've got to have people who are going to pave the way forward by suspending judgment and letting go of the way things were, the way things should be based on our experience. We need to have a group of people who represent our customer base and who are looking at what are the best ways to do business, what are the best ways to minimize risk, regardless of whether it's ever been done before, or even in some cases it's been done before unsuccessfully. Now we're doing it in a new context.
All right. Well, we are going to have to take a break for a few commercials, and then we will be back with the next segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Multifamily properties' water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Well, we are back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and we are discussing the topic of or how reopening the economy impacts multifamily management. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me today are two longtime multifamily industry veterans, Rich George, president of the NOI Coach, and Doug Chasick, president of the Apartment Doctor. I do want to remind our guests, if you would like to provide show topics, guest ideas, suggestions, or just listen to any archived episode of Multifamily Matters, please go to our website at multifamilyradio.com. So, Rich, we talked about in the last segment setting up a task force within a company to look at the economy and as it pertains to their multifamily assets. Let's talk about the first stage. What does that look like? What do they need to be concerned with?
You know, I think that an overruling thought here, we need to keep in mind that area of common law, the concept of negligence. Negligence is an unreasonable response to a foreseeable risk. So when you think about that, we have to be reasonable because we definitely have a foreseeable risk in our future, and that is, you know, the spread of this contagion. So we have to keep that in mind. So as we maybe take a deeper dive into that phase one, the health and safety, we have to keep that in mind. You know, it's time for us to keep calm and think health and safety. So,
okay. And what type of protocols do this for something like this?
You know, Doug, you and I, before this call, we talked a little bit about what we've quoted as the touch point analysis. Would you explain what we were talking about with the touch point analysis?
Yeah, absolutely. It's simply looking at every place that is going to be touched, physically touched. And, making the appropriate protocols for sanitizing, cleaning, et cetera. And there are a couple of things, as I mentioned earlier, in addition to relying on the authorities as far as procedures, whether it's CDC or OSHA, I think we've also got to look at what we feel is acceptable versus what the customer's perception is of what's acceptable. It's going to be a while before we have vaccines in place, before there's general crowd immunity, before there are therapies available. And I think it's in our best interest as an industry to approach this entire topic with the thought that everyone else out there is positive. And because that's how most of our customers are going to think, that how do I know that person in front of me, that other person in the elevator, that person who just opened the door with their ungloved hand, how do I know they're asymptomatic? I don't know anything. So we've got to provide and announce and even market a standard of cleaning that addresses these fears and anxieties that are going to be present for the foreseeable future.
You know, so, I think that's a great point, Doug, because I think that there's just a few places that I've been since we've been in this self-quarantine isolation situation. I've gone to the grocery store a couple of times. In my particular grocery store, they have somebody right there at the entrance, and as you come in, they've got shopping carts that they are sanitizing right there on the spot. So that they, and they tell you, here are the ones that are sanitized. And that's a very important as a customer perception to me. You know, there's a whole level of sanitization, disinfection, you know, antiviral chemicals. I believe that we might move towards things like microbial fogging. I think frequency is all, these are all things that this task force needs to be looking at. And as Doug put it, it really needs to be visible. Our customers need to see this, and not just Monday through Friday. I think we have to be looking at what's the future hold too.
You know, Rich, when you're talking about all of these new tasks that that could be created from the task force, is that going to require people having additional staffing to take care of these needs?
You know, it's a great question, Paul, and I think that's to be determined. I don't personally think so. I think it's just going to change the way that our workflow works. I don't think that our headcounts are necessarily going to go up, but what we do and how we do it is going to have to modify and change. You know, when we start to talk and move this conversation, Paul, into stage two, the management operational changes, I want to get a little bit more in depth about what we were just talking about, of how we are going to accomplish this. Again, this is all guessing right now. Go ahead.
As far as the protections for employees, what are you thinking that the task force needs to look at for that?
You know, I think that we are seeing a lot of best practices emerge, whether it's being in the healthcare industry, whether it's in the, you know, in grocery stores and in the few places that are open. You know, we're seeing the masks and the gloves. You know, one of the things that, as an industry, we should have been ahead of this. We should have been wearing latex gloves on a pretty consistent basis when we're doing service work in apartments. And, you know, not necessarily masks, I don't think, prior to this, but we have to really look and follow, like Doug is saying, the guidance of the CDC and what our local health departments and OSHA are going to say. But for the time being, I think overkill is the plan. I think we have to do more than is necessary, because we have to go beyond that definition of negligence, reasonable. What do you think about that, Doug?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's that perception, whether it's from our resident or whether it's from the employee, that we've got to be, I think, err on the side of caution. And as I mentioned to you earlier, Rich, this morning, I think we're going to have a great resource in the hospitality industry, because in order for them to increase their occupancies in hotels, they are going to have to market cleanliness. They're going to have to market the cleanliness of the room, the cleanliness of the employees, the best practices, and we'll be able to emulate them in a lot of areas for both the customer-facing policies and procedures as well as our internal policies and procedures. So I think we're going to have a great wealth of information to utilize going forward.
What Rich, what do you think about you know, there's been a lot of talk in the industry about remote working for the employees or teleworking. What do you see as far as what's happening now, and then as far as this planning and strategic planning for the future, where is that going to go?
Yeah, that's a great question, Paul, because I, you know, being a teleworker myself for the past 13 years of my life, Doug is in the same situation. We work from our homes most of the time. I've been able to watch my wife and my daughter doing her schoolwork remotely. My wife is a senior engineering manager for GM, working remotely. I think it's become very clear that we can be almost as productive doing telework in certain capacities. Obviously, that's not true. You know, I saw one of those memes the other day on the internet that said that my house cleaner has decided that she's going to telework, so she sent me a very long list of instructions of what to do. I don't think we can do that in service work, but, you know, I think that when we're talking about our employees, you know, again, we never really stop, but as we are coming back from work, we need to look at some different procedures. I'm seeing some companies are starting to put together right at their time clocks, employee questionnaire that they have to fill out where they're being asked, have you had contact with anyone with confirmed virus within the last 14 days? Have you had any of these symptoms in the last 14 days, a fever greater than 100, difficulty breathing, cough? Are you currently experiencing a fever? And they have to answer these questions before they clock in. And I think that that's maybe a short-term solution. It might be a permanent solution. Who knows? I think it's reasonable for us to be checking the temperatures of our employees, you know, as they start their shifts for work. Because what we have to do is for those people that have to come to work to perform the tasks that need to be performed, these essential workers, as they've been called, and they are, and mad respect for people that have not been able to shelter in place. You know, we have to provide additional layers to them, such as staggered and structured work schedules. You know, one of my clients are doing work teams so that they can keep track of the tracing, the contact tracing of who's worked with who. So they have gone to, you know, on sites where they used to have a primarily 5-day-a-week schedule, they've gone to a 7-day-a-week schedule. And they are having smaller teams working in pairs. They're looking at all of the workflows, and they're saying, what are some of the workflows that can still be done remotely? You know, we've been preparing for this for the last 2 decades with technology. You know, we are, you know, with everything in the cloud and all of our software being app-based, you know, we are a lot more productive today than we would have been had we faced this 20 years ago.
Well, you know, I got to tell you that the technology that's available, you know, as far as remote leasing and all the different things that people have been touting, you know, there's been some resistance, I guess, for people. Anytime there's change, there's resistance. But I think this has kind of put those things in the forefront. What are you seeing with that? Do you think that the industry is now, technology is going to play a much larger role now?
You know, I think it was headed that way regardless of pandemic. And mm-hmm. I think now we just see the need for it. A lot of people were always afraid we're going to be replaced by robots and machines, right? And it's not about that. This is a people business. It is such a people-driven business. So there's never going to be a lack for work. But what those things that we can automate for our customers and the things we can automate for ourselves, it's critical.
Okay, well, we've got to take a break. We are going to be back after these messages. You are listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Tired of being burned by your carpet vendor? Nobody has you covered like Rasa Floors. They lead the industry with same-day service and cutting-edge technology, like their online ordering portal and mobile app, so you can place orders instantly. The professionals at Rasa Floors are the industry experts offering the hottest new styles of carpet and hard surfaces that will help you achieve your goals. Visit them on social media, watch their videos, and look for them at local trade shows. Rasa Floors will help you make ready your apartment homes for new residents. For more information, visit rasafloors.com.
Looking for cost savings and curb appeal? Call WaterLogic, the nation's specialist in multifamily property water management.
Using interactive, smart water technology, WaterLogix professionals can help you save up to 40% on irrigation water annually, potentially adding tens of thousands of dollars back into your budget. Call WaterLogix at 713-983-9555 for a no-cost irrigation usage analysis. Your property will look great, and you'll be a hometown hero.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
Well, we are back. If you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing the topic of how reopening the economy impacts multifamily management. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me today are two longtime multifamily industry veterans who are sought after national speakers and educators, Rick George, president of the NOI Coach, and Doug Chasick, president of the Apartment Doctor. I do want to take a moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. EconServe, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S. Rasa Floors, the professional flooring advisor, specializing in make-ready replacement flooring for the multifamily industry throughout Texas and Oklahoma. Allegion, a leading provider of mobile-enabled products and solutions for efficient access control within multifamily properties. WaterLogix, the smarter way to water, providing irrigation water management. And CTS, complete technology solutions, making managed IT an easy business decision for multifamily. So, Rich and Doug, I guess I was cutting out a little bit last episode, which I think is part of the challenges of working remotely. Sometimes you have some technical difficulties. Hopefully that's been resolved. But I guess that kind of leads us into stage two, Rich, as far as the management and operational changes. What do you think about that?
You know, Paul, I think that this is where we're going to take a lot of analysis, planning. We're going to have to really rethink. And this is where flexibility is going to be key. One of the first things that was brought up at a national level and even at a legislative level was sick leave and policy adjustments. So we've got the temporary requirements, but we have to look at that on a more long-term basis. Doug, what are your thoughts about how a property management company needs to be looking at their sick leave policy going forward?
EEOC has been right on the spot in terms of issuing new guidance and issuing it in light of the fact that nobody can really agree on whether COVID is an illness or a disability under ADA. So it's crucial that companies, large and small, and especially small without HR departments, are following what the guidance is, which can easily be obtained from the EEOC and the ADA websites. And I think it's also going to depend on the size of the company and the staying power of the company, where a larger company, if someone is diagnosed, might let them go with full pay on the 14-day quarantine, where a smaller company may not be able to. I wouldn't be surprised to see some kind of legislation, either at the local level or at the federal level, that's addressing this so that there's not a hodgepodge of policies, which for large national companies might be a real potential pitfall, where they're doing something in one state but not in the other. So like everything else that we're talking about, it's a work in progress. We're making it up as we go along. And the key is to rely on authority, which in this case is EEOC, as far as these policies go.
You know, Doug, I want to piggyback off of that. At the end of the day, we need to ask ourselves, is our policy encouraging people to stay home when they're sick? You know, in the past, most people have looked at their PTO. In fact, we've gotten rid of sick days, quote unquote. We called them PTO, you know, and people save their PTO because they want them as Christmas shopping days come December. So I'm going to go to work when I have that cough or that sniffle, and that's the last thing we need right now. You know, we have to have, you know, our management operational policies have to incentivize people to take off and not infect others.
That's a great point.
And I guess let's talk about some of the workflows. What should be the first consideration when it comes to workflows?
You know, I think that there have been a lot of people. In fact, you've had a couple of people on your show in the recent weeks, Paul, about those digital and virtual tours and how this is going to impact marketing. That's a huge workflow that we have to account for. And, you know, I don't think that the two guests that you have today are probably the best people because we're more operational people. And mm-hmm. I'm sure that there are plenty of partners that you have. In fact, some of your sponsors that can help people with that particular workflow. But this task force really needs to focus in on that. I think what we do need to zero in on is how we're collecting rent. You know, there's, again, a hodgepodge of things, to use Doug's words, out there of how we're, you know, the late fee abatements and the rent holidays. And, you know, just recently I heard the statistics from Jay Turner that, you know, April 13% collections went backwards for the industry on a nationwide basis. Fortunately for me and my clients and our assets, we are not seeing that big of a drop, but we are anticipating May to be a bigger drop. And we need to ask ourselves, you know, with these stalling of evictions and, you know, it's just going to dig a hole. So we have to ask ourselves. And what I know and what I'm working on with my clients, and I think Doug, you and I are very similar with both of our client bases, is it really we have to commit to that case by case approach, because this pandemic has not had equal effect on all of our residents. Right? It hasn't had the same effect. Some people are continuing to work and continuing to get a paycheck, and it has zero impact, has a huge impact on their social life, but on the revenue. So we don't need to be able to bend for everybody. Other people have had a dramatic impact. So we need to look on a case-by-case basis. Most of my clients, they're reaching out on one-by-one on their rent collections. They are just looking at everything uniquely. Doug, what do you have to add to that?
Oh, absolutely. It has to be, for fair housing compliance, it has to be considered on an individual basis. Unfortunately, the early statistics that I'm seeing are showing the worst impact on certain protected classes that you're going to have to look at. How do you accommodate, not in the disability sense of the word, but how do you accommodate situations and not people? We've got to be careful that we're not being overly empathetic, overly helpful with somebody that we feel sorry for them. We've got to deal with the situation. If you haven't worked for X number of weeks, then here's what we're going to do. It doesn't matter what your protected class is, whether we like you or not, et cetera, et cetera. And I think we're going to have to apply that same standard to renewals. I also think that in certain markets, we've got to look at the big picture. What's the context in which this is occurring? Because there are markets where there is the potential for great social disruption with rent strikes and residents organizing. And I think we've got to be sensitive to that and sensitive to the appearance of what we're doing and how are we going to market it? How are we going to justify it? So consistency is the key. Focus on the situation, not on the person. That's the safest way to navigate the foreseeable future with regard to fair housing compliance.
And you know, Paul, you got a good balance here between Doug and I, because me, the operational guy, the NOI coach, I'm all about the money. I'm, just go get that money. And Doug balances that out and says, make sure let's do this in a fair way. And one of the things that Doug didn't mention there is we also need to look at the impact on a property by property basis of the resident profile. And when I talk about profile here, we might be talking about some of those fair housing classes. It's always that delicate line between fair housing and demographics. But what about those people that have a preferred employer program? You know, right there in your market, Paul, you know, what's happening to the oil industry has just got to be devastating. On top of all of this, that's devastating to some of your properties, but huge sections or huge swaths of the property are being impacted. So we might treat those people from that particular employer
in a different way than we do from the people that are in the support area around that same employer. I'm from Detroit, so I get that single source income on properties, and it can be, you know, hugely devastating. So we have to look at all of that. Doug mentioned lease renewals too. I think that our goal right now is going to be stability. So this is where we may be looking at saying, you know what, let's look at longer term lease options. Let's look at giving people shorter term options to get them to bridge through this without, you know, maybe the revenue bump. Again, it's hard to believe that the NOI coach is saying this, but we really have to look at those things.
Well, and I've got a quick, I've got a question. It's really not something that we have been discussing, but I was thinking while you were talking about how the impact of this affects, you know, across the board. But what about the different segments within multifamily? For instance, student housing. You know, all these colleges have shut their campuses down, and now they're going to online learning. Well, a student doesn't have to be close to a campus to do online learning. So when the, you know, fall semesters come around, which is the busy leasing time for student housing. And by the way, we only have a little bit over a minute in this segment, but just quick question about that. What do you see for that segment as far as how their task force should be planning for that? Because they have no control over what the colleges do and the universities do.
It's that old ideology of all your eggs in one basket, right? I mean, we've told our whole lives not to do that. So, but that's where these task forces are uniquely specific. You know, you've heard Doug and I throughout this whole conversation talking about this is very, very specific, and that's a great case to show that we have to be very specific. You know, as we finish moving through stage two, though, all of this is going to play to, you know, that forecast for our owners. What are we going to mm-hmm. do to forecast this revenue stream that's unpredictable? And because they need that right now. You know, those of you that are going on investor calls or owner calls, they want to hear something that sounds like it, you know what the hell you're talking about, and yet don't. And so, you know, we have to be really trying to sit back and say, what impact is this going to have for that long term? Because that long term is going to matter. How we get through this, you know, we're a great asset, it's a great investment, and it will continue to be. But it all depends on what we do today, how easy tomorrow will be.
All right, well, we're going to take a break and be back after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Tired of being burned by your carpet vendor? Nobody has you covered like Rasa Floors. They lead the industry with same-day service and cutting-edge technology, like their online ordering portal and mobile app, so you can place orders instantly. The professionals at Rasa Floors are the industry experts offering the hottest new styles of carpet and hard surfaces that will help you achieve your goals. Visit them on social media, watch their videos, and look for them at local trade shows. Rasa Floors will help you make ready your apartment homes for new residents. For more information, visit rasafloors.com.
Well, we are back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing the topic of how reopening the economy impacts multifamily management. I'm Paul Marks. Joining me today are two longtime multifamily industry veterans who are sought-after national speakers and educators, Rich George, president of the NOI Coach, and Doug Chasick, president of The Apartment Doctor. Doug, I want to ask you, stage three of this process that the task force will be doing is finding the new way for multifamily. What's the difference between the new way and the new normal?
Well, first of all, I think the new normal is kind of an oxymoron, because once it's normal, how is it new? So living in the present, I would rather look at this as the new way, as taking what we've spoken about in stage one and stage two and executing. Stage three is about execution, observation, and then fine-tuning and tweaking. That's why it's so important that for each of the new ways that we choose, whether it's the new staffing model that we have, that we are shifting from the number of people who are employees to outsourcing certain tasks, whether we've gone to completely online payment systems where we've now freed up certain admin bandwidth that we don't need and we can repurpose those resources to doing other things. Obviously, from the conversation thus far, we've stressed, probably overstressed, the importance of creating and maintaining a hospital-like cleanliness level. So as we go forward in the new way, we've got to be carefully documenting what we're doing and having regular meetings where we complete after-action reports, where we look at, okay, what have we done? Out of what we have done, what did we do well? What can we improve? How can we improve it? What pitfalls did we identify? How can we avoid those going forward? And then use that as our new plan that we're executing. The key here, again, is to suspend judgment, not to be irresponsible, because our task force is going to be made up of responsible people. Let those responsible people look at, you know, I was talking to Rich earlier this morning about something that sounds crazy. What about the feasibility of using drones for virtual tours, where you would have a prospect led to the vacant apartment by a drone, and the drone would then lead them through, and the leasing professional would be speaking to the person? Yeah, I know it sounds crazy, but let's at least consider things, and then let's document. Oh, well, Doug, that was ridiculous. Good, let's not do it anymore. But don't just take things off the table without looking deeper.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Rich, I know that, and I want to ask one question, because you talked about the sanitizing and the cleaning and the hospital-like cleaning that needs to occur. I was talking to somebody at a property recently, and they said that you know, they put signs out that they are going to clean at certain intervals during the day, but if in amenities, and when amenities open back up, they're, you know, the residents or the people who are using amenities are going to be responsible for cleaning after their use, which of course has always been the thought process, but nope, not everybody adheres to that. Do you think that's going to change as far as are we going to be doing more frequent cleanings of amenity areas and so forth? Is that going to be something that the staff has to now take in consideration?
You know, absolutely. I think we're going to have to, Paul. I think that's part of it. And, you know, the disappointing answer, though, to your question of, do you think people are going to actually, you know, wipe down their fitness equipment when they're done, is, you know, I've got little faith in the, and I think we will for a while. But I, every time I go into a workout facility, whether it's at a hotel or whatever, or at the gym, I assume the person that got off it before me doesn't. And that's mm-hmm. We're all just going to have to be aware. And that's one of the things that, as landlords, who we are constantly being sued for everything, we wish that people understood that their safety is their own responsibility. We're going to do everything that we can, everything within reason. Remember that definition of negligence is a reasonable response to a foreseeable risk. We have to do what's reasonable. Everyone else has to take it from there. And, you know, signs aren't going to change whether people do or not. It's not even really going to change. Most attorneys would tell you it's not even going to change your liability or potential liability. But what we have to do is we have to make pandemic planning as a key element of our emergency action plans. I mean, it's just got to become a part of it. Some people had it, but, man, do we have much better experience to write those plans now? Because, and we have to be careful. What's going to happen when it comes to COVID-20? And I said that to a client this morning, and he's like, shut your mouth. You know, but ultimately, we might have the next one. And next time, it might be airborne. Next time, it might be a chemical or a biological weapon. You know, and so we need to take what we've learned. Like Doug was talking about, that after-action report, we have to really take our lessons learned and catalog this, because a year from now, Paul, you're going to have me on your show, me and Doug, and we're going to be talking about something different. And this is going to feel like long, long ago yesteryear. So we need to write it down now. We need to figure it out now, because now is when, first of all, most of us have time. I'm doing all kinds of stuff right now that I never had time for before. I'm loving it. I'm really taking advantage on a personal level as well as a professional level with this time.
Yeah, and I think I don't think there's a closet or a cabinet inside my home, since I'm working from home, that I haven't been through and reorganized and thrown things out. So, yes, it is a good time for doing things both personally.
As soon as the Salvation Army starts accepting donations, they're going to get overwhelmed. I got a garage that's half filled with stuff to donate because of that.
As long as you don't tell me you caught up on email. I don't want to hear that.
I just didn't catch up on your emails, Doug.
Okay.
So let's talk.
You know, I'd like to comment real quick, if I could, Paul, about what Rich said. And yeah, you know, I live in Florida, and they closed the beaches. So what happened? Everybody's parked on the shoulder, and they're at the beach. A very wise man once told me, "Don't make a rule that you can't enforce." I agree that posting signs is not in and of itself going to change behavior. But I think in keeping with avoiding the potential of being accused of negligence, that we do our best to train our residents that they are responsible for their own safety and well-being. We do post the signs. We do talk about how to clean the equipment. We furnish them with the supplies necessary to clean the equipment. And then I want to go back to something I said this morning, which is not morbid. It shouldn't be depressing or pessimistic. It's just, for the foreseeable future, assume everyone is COVID-19 positive and govern yourself accordingly. And that way we're all aware. We're all on the same page.
Yeah, that's good advice. You know, with the new workflows, procedures, and with time restrictions, what are the main things that this task force needs to consider when it comes to this new way?
You know, I think there's a couple of things. Number one, I think we need to look to the national lease program and say, should we have a new clause in the lease that requires our residents to notify us if they have been diagnosed in the future with anything that's at a pandemic level? You know, if they've got any virus, I think we need to be looking towards, Doug mentioned it earlier, OSHA and our local health authorities, because they're going to be coming out with a lot of stuff as it relates to this. You know, OSHA was not Johnny on the spot like EEOC was with this, but they're going to catch up, and there's going to be some new requirements, some new standards, just like bloodborne pathogens and lockout, tagout, and all of those types of things. But most importantly, I think that we need to look at ourselves as like little micro governments, each one of our communities, each one of our properties. And we have to say, you know what, we keep hearing about the national stockpile. We need to have our own little stockpiles on our properties to make sure that we're prepared for the next time. This is part of that emergency action planning. It's all about making sure that we have, you know, what everybody wants right now, latex gloves and masks. You know, beyond that, do we have the stuff that we need, the hand sanitizers, the wipes for our fitness centers? You know, we need to be buying that stuff, thinking about days like today when you can't buy that stuff anywhere for anything. So, you know,
right.
These are all things that work group needs to be looking at. But all of the stage three stuff, I really envision this when Doug and I were talking about these three stages. I envision this in a few months. I don't know if it's a month, if it's 6 months. But when we've gotten past the safety and the management and operation changes. Now let's stop and let's be less reactive and more proactive about what tomorrow brings. So this list will continue to grow, and maybe we have another call about this. You know, maybe we do another show about this fall in 6 months and say, really, where is this new way? Because the sure. last thing in the world that we should want right now is for things to go back to the way they once were. What we need right. is the new and improved version of what we do. We will be stronger. We will be leaner. We will be meaner. We don't want what we used to have. We want better, and we'll find that. That's the way we are as a society, as a country, and most importantly, as an industry.
Well, we only have about a minute left in the show. I just want to ask each of you, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, how can they do that, and how can they learn more about this?
You know what, Paul, Doug and I, when we were preparing for this topic for you, we're also preparing it for tomorrow. We're recording four of the micro webinars for the National Apartment Association. If you're not there, go check those out, and you're going to get a little bit more in depth of this program. And on top of it, you know, feel free to reach out to me. I'm at noicoach.com. Doug, what about your contact information?
Best way to get me is email dchasek@gmail.com. And I'm working with NAA and Grace Hill on very detailed fair housing and COVID-19 webinars that are complimentary. If you go to gracehill.com, you can get the information on those. Next one is this coming Thursday at 1 o'clock Eastern, I believe.
All right, great. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. We definitely will do this again whenever you guys are ready and you want to talk about more of this. It's important information. Everybody wants to reopen the economy, but we can't do it too quickly. Like you said, it's going to be more of a dimmer switch than a toggle switch. So thanks for joining us. We will be back next week.
One last week before you start there. I just want to say, I think collectively from all of us, we can give a huge shout out to all of our on-site essential employees. They've handled this in a phenomenal way.
Exactly. I agree. Well, thank you guys. We are going to be back next week with another power panel of guests and industry experts and a great topic. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.